For Michael, the trip west was begun with reluctance. But for younger brother Andrew, it was a grand adventure, to be met with a light heart and eagerness. That spirit became contagious after Michael's gradual acceptance of the necessity which had set him upon the trail west. He began to relax into the quiet contentment that always came upon him when he entered the wilderness. And after his initial resistance passed, he found pleasure in Andrew's company, something he'd not expected after enjoying several winters in the solitude of the deep and silent woods. Andrew had laughed off Michael's early disapproval and his attempts at demonstrated anger. Andrew's easy smile and his quick wit squelched every objection like soft spring rain dousing a campfire. Michael had no choice but to give in. In a sense, he relived, through Andrew's wondering eyes, his own first gaining of independence. They moved at a leisurely pace, once Michael felt relatively confident the Blackwoods couldn't follow. He doubted anyone in that family was Andrew's equal at finding a trail and staying on it like a hound following a scent. Andrew, more farmer than Michael and more attentive to the future, had thoughtfully brought a supply of corn tied with the rest of his possibles behind his saddle. But they were to eat sparingly of it, saving most for seed to be planted whenever and wherever they found a place to drive stakes. As Michael had usually done during his winter trapping trips, they lived mostly on whatever the land offered. Squirrel and rabbit when pickings were lean, fish sometimes when they camped by a stream, venison when luck showed her warm side. They encountered almost no people in the first days on the trail. Michael regarded this as a blessing, for he needed no one. Besides, a careless word by somebody whose path they crossed could betray them to the Blackwoods. Andrew became a little restive. He was more inclined toward sociability.
We've passed through some fair to middling country.
Andrew spoke one night as they sat beside a small burned-down campfire, roasting venison on sticks over the glowing coals.
How come there ain't no people here to speak of?
This country's still the way the Lord made it. Ain't no people except engines since the creation. Why rush to spoil it?
Just seems to me like this world was made for people. Don't seem right to me for it to be so empty.
Empty?
Michael lifted the sharp stick from which a juicy piece of venison dripped fat into the fire.
We found meat here, didn't we? There's plenty more where it come from. This land is full of life. Just ain't much of it human is all. Seems to me maybe the Lord likes it this way, or he wouldn't have given us so much of it.
Everybody talks about what the Lord likes. I wonder if anybody ever asked him.
Michael shook his head. He'd never thought of it that way.
Probably wouldn't like what he'd say. So most people don't ask him. They tell him instead.
Andrew smiled and examined his piece of venison gingerly with his fingers.
Ha! Whew! Yeah, one thing I'll bet he don't like is for us to waste what all he's given us. Been wondering about that seed corn. Will we get to where we're going in time to plant it this season?
I don't even know where we're going exactly. Just to wherever we find a place we like that's got room for us.
One place had been much on his mind of late. A land forbidden to him. One that had given him some of the grandest days of his life, sharing the sunshine of his father's company. It had also given him the most terrible time in his memory.
Texas.
We going to Texas?
Michael was startled at himself and at the question.
It's a closed country. They kill Americans there. You don't even want to be thinking about it.
You've been thinking about it ever since you came back that time without Papa. I could always tell when it was on your mind. I could see it in your eyes. I see it there now.
Michael frowned. Andrew had a knack for perception. Maybe that was why he was such a good tracker among his other virtues.
Like you said, I came back without Papa. I wouldn't want to go back without you.
That's been years. Maybe things have changed now.
I ain't heard of nothing changed. There was a story in the settlement about some fellow named Long who went in there just a while back. Them Spanish, they buried him. Don't sound like their hospitality has improved much.
I heard he meant to take the country away from them.
Wouldn't make any difference. They'll shoot a man for being an American whether he's taken anything or not. We don't need no truck with them people.
If not Texas, then where? We can't just wander around the rest of our lives like some bird that can't decide from north and south.
Ain't a bad way to live. Papa liked it.
But Michael knew it was not for Andrew. Not indefinitely. Andrew had much of Papa's look about him. Studying him in the red glow of the small fire, Michael thought he probably looked very much like Papa did at that age. He had much of Papa's manner, too, but he lacked Papa's unquenchable wanderlust. Andrew enjoyed getting away from home and field a while at a time. Then he was ready to return to a more structured way of living. In that respect, he fitted somewhere between Michael and older brother Joseph. He liked to travel and to hunt, but he had no fear of a plow handle. Sooner or later, Michael knew he'd have to find Andrew a home.
Natchitoches, Louisiana. I'm thinking that's where we'll go first.
What's at Natchitoches?
I don't know. Maybe Eli Pleasant.
It's been years. How do you know Eli's even alive?
I don't. But I've got a feeling in my gut that if he's still living, we'll find him around Natchitoches. He had a liking for the place.
And if we do find him, then what?
He knows the country. Maybe he can show us where two likely young fellers can make a place for themselves.
There'd always been opportunity on the frontier for bold men who welcomed a challenge. Michael had no concern for himself. He could live off the forest. Given his choices, he'd prefer that style of life over the plow, though he knew in the long run it was not practical. Papa had done it, and he had gone hungry a lot. But Papa had been a happy man, after his fashion. The only pity was that he always went off and left a family behind to do for itself the best it was able. If Michael could, he would follow the same pattern as his father, with one major exception. He wouldn't marry, as Papa had done, and burden some unfortunate woman with the responsibility for a farm and children. Andrew asked a lot of questions about Natchitoches. Michael answered them to the best of his somewhat sketchy memory. His first visit with Papa had been short, and during his second stay, he'd been handicapped by his slow recovery from the wound suffered at the hands of the Spanish soldiers.
Main thing I remember is that it was about as big a settlement as ever I saw, though Papa said he'd seen several that was bigger. I remember there was a lot of boats on the river, people hauling stuff up and down and acting like they knew what they was doing, but I never could tell it by listening to them. They spoke French, most of them, instead of American. And there was Spanish, too. Kept me tied up in a knot trying to figure out what they was talking about.
I don't recollect that I ever heard any folks talking any language but American. Must seem real funny.
At first, maybe. But it's got kind of a pleasant sound to it once you get used to not understanding.
Did you learn any French?
Just a few words. I'm afraid I forgot them all by now.
Wasn't Marie taught them to you?
Michael almost dropped the venison.
Who said there was somebody named Marie?
You did. I've heard you talking to her in your sleep, more than once. There was a word now and then that I didn't understand. Expect that was French. Pretty language, you say. Pretty girl, too, I'd bet.
You must have heard me wrong. Anyway, you're too young to know about pretty girls.
You ain't the only one who's listened to Cousin Frank.
Andrew looked at the venison and seemed to decide it needed a little more time over the fire.
How's that country look for farming?
Fair to middling. Kind of swampy, some of it, but there were some good farms around Natchitoches. Some big ones, some little ones. Mostly they're owned by people with French names. They've been traded from France to the Spanish and back to France and finally to us, till they don't know which country they belong to, hardly. Louisiana's like some foreign country itself compared to what we know. Me, you, we may not fit into a place like that.
Andrew seemed intrigued, and he harbored no doubts.
We're from Tennessee. We can hold our own anywhere. That girl Marie, she got any sisters?
The first people they met in days turned out to be a family on its way back to the safe and known comforts of Tennessee. They were a ragged and hungry lot, a farmer and his wife and four children, hollow-eyed and haggard, at first obviously frightened of Michael and Andrew. Some of that fear remained even after the two young men gave him a fat doe they'd killed.
You all headed west?
The farmer's eyes showed that he assessed any such notion as a poor idea.
Well, we've been there. Plumb out past Natchitoches to the Sabine River, with Texas across on the other side. I'm telling you, it ain't no fit place for a Christian. Stories you hear from the people who come across the river to get away from the Spanish soldiers. And it ain't that much better on this side, neither. Squatters, fugitives, sinners of the meanest sort. A man's got to watch out or they'll steal the boots off his feet while he's walking. They done cleaned us out, picked us to the bone. Wagon, plow, house goods. All we got is what you see.
It wasn't much. two horses, one carrying a gaunt woman and a small girl of 6 or 7, the other carrying a pack too small to contain much of the world's goods. A girl in her teens and two smaller boys walked behind their father.
You'd think they'd finally leave us alone. As little as we had left, no. Back yonder a ways, we come upon some human vultures along the trail, and they'd taken what victuals we had left. Had to beg them not to take the horses and set the woman and the baby afoot.
The farmer glanced at his wife, who still held her distance distrustfully from Michael and Andrew.
The way they looked at Marthy and my oldest girl, I was afraid they had even worse on their minds. I'm telling you, boys, this trail is wicked. Was I you, I'd heist my tail and go back to where I come from as fast as my horse could carry me. That's what we ends up doing.
Even after the gift of the deer, the miserable little family wouldn't stop and share camp with Michael and Andrew. With her nervous eyes, the woman begged her husband to keep moving on. Andrew watched with sympathy as they continued eastward along the dim trace.
Sounds scary the way he tells it.
It's always scary to them that shouldn't have left home in the first place. People like that ain't got the backbone for rock country. They ought to stay in the tidewater. Tennessee wasn't exactly like church when Papa and Uncle Benjamin first went into it, but you didn't see them turn around and go back. They was a stronger stuff.
I didn't mean we ought to turn around. Anywhere you go, I'm game to go with you.
I never doubted that. If the Lewises that went before us had listened to everybody that talked scary, we'd still be on the other side of the big water, bowing to some king. We don't bow to nobody.
But the farmer's anxiety lingered with Michael, reminding him of the time he had followed after Papa and had run into the robbers Patch-Eye and Quint. He had heard tales of terrible deeds along the Natchez Trace. This trace from Tennessee to Louisiana was as dim, perhaps even dimmer. People had disappeared on it, lots of people. It passed through many a long stretch darkened by the dense timber, the heavy canopy of trees that shut out the sunlight and hid the deeds of cold-blooded men. Against this, Texas, by Michael's recollection, was a land of open sunlight. There, evil deeds were hidden not by the gloom of the forest, but by the vastness of the land, the isolation. The wind at their backs, Michael and Andrew failed to smell wood smoke until suddenly they broke through a clump of timber and rode upon several men camped on the bank of a clear-running creek, their blankets spread in the sun to freshen and dry. A sizable number of horses were staked on the grass, though it was but mid-afternoon. The nearest man sprang to his feet, bringing up a long Kentucky-style rifle and pointing it first at Andrew, then at Michael. Michael knew immediately that he did not like the looks of this bunch. He stared down the rifle barrel at the man's suspicious eyes and got a strong message that the feeling was mutual. His hand tightened on his own rifle, though he had the good judgment not to make any threatening move. A tall man, hunkered beside a campfire, roasting a goodly chunk of venison on a crude spit, pushed warily to a stand. He strode slowly toward Michael and Andrew, giving them a long and careful study. The other men in camp formed a wedge on either side of him, all carrying their weapons.
Put the gun down, Jake. These boys don't look like there'd be any harm in them.
Jake was not in a rush about it, but he complied, lowering the rifle barrel an inch at a time until he visually inventoried the Lewis's weapons. He had several weeks' growth of ragged beard and didn't appear to have used the waters of this creek, or any other for some time, either to bathe himself or wash his clothes. Neither, by the look of him, had the gangling spokesman.
Where you boys come from?
Michael remembered Patch-Eye and Quint. These looked as if they might be the same caliber. There were far more of them. He had long since embraced a rule that the less information he gave to strangers, the better. He jerked his head toward the trail over which they had ridden.
Back yonder?
Where are you bound for?
Michael pointed his chin westward.
Yonder way?
The man threatened to break into a smile. He turned to Andrew.
You as talkative as your friend.
Pert near? We're brothers.
Shows in your faces. You all by yourselves?
There's a bunch just behind us.
Michael frowned as Andrew glanced questioningly at him.
I expect they'll be catching up to us in a little bit.
Just about any time now.
The man gave Michael and Andrew another minute's speculative study. His eyes indicated that he did not accept the story, but he offered no argument.
We're headed the opposite direction ourselves. Been way out past Natchitoches to the Sabine River. traded for a bunch of young horses to peddle in the settlements.
Michael saw them grazing near the edge of the creek. They looked like the same kind of Texas wild horses which had brought death to his father and so many others. He wondered if men had died for these. Horse flesh came at a high price sometimes.
You must thank hard for Jake for being suspicious. Been some mean doings on this trace. A bunch of young horses could be a temptation to men of loose character. I can tell by looking that you all ain't that striped. Get down and share the Lord's bounty with us, and welcome.
Michael counted 6 men in all. The rest looked pretty much like Jake and the tall man doing the talking. He wondered if there might be others in the timber, out of sight. Even 6 were too many to fight if it came to that. He could see the hunger in Andrew's eyes, and he looked toward the venison roasting over the coals. They had encountered no game after giving theirs to the defeated family retreating to Tennessee. But Michael considered the risk too high.
Thank you kindly, but there's considerable daylight left, and we best be using it.
I reckon we are a hard-looking lot to somebody who don't know us. I don't blame you for being careful. If 2 sons of mine was on the trail, I'd want them to be just as cautious.
Andrew's eyes told Michael he'd like to stay and eat. Michael frowned, silently bidding him to be quiet.
Much obliged, but we'll keep traveling.
As you wish. You all keep your eyes open just the same. There's people loose upon the land that old Lucifer himself wouldn't claim.
Michael stopped his horse in the creek to let him drink, facing him toward the camp so he could keep a watch on the men there. Andrew took the cue and did likewise, though it was clear he didn't share Michael's misgivings.
They're rough looking, sure. I believe they're honest. I don't see where it would have hurt to eat with them.
If you're wrong, it might have been us that got eaten up instead of the venison.
Disagreement was in Andrew's eyes, but he accepted the older brother's judgment as he would have accepted Mordecai's, were he still living. Michael was glad when the horses and the pack mule were satisfied so they could put the camp behind them. Uneasiness remained with him long after the men were out of sight.
Let's turn out into that brush yonder.
Andrew kept his question bottled up. Michael rode over a matting of old leaves that retained little or no track. 100 feet from the trail, he dismounted, rifle in his hand. He checked the powder in the pan.
Let's sit and watch a spell.
You don't really think they'll come after us?
If they do, I'd rather it was them that got surprised.
They squatted in the heavy growth of timber and waited. Michael expected pursuit to come quickly, if it was to come at all. He remembered the day at Miller's Crossing, when Finnish Blackwood had plotted to steal his pelts. After perhaps a quarter hour, Andrew loosened up and seated himself on the ground.
I don't think anybody's coming.
Don't be in a rush.
But another quarter hour passed without sign of pursuit.
Looks to me like you saw a possum and thought it was a bear.
Michael was weakening, but not yet ready to surrender.
We'll watch a while yet. You trust folks too much.
I was taught that way.
Out here, you better teach yourself different, or somebody is apt to deliver you a lesson you won't laugh about.
Finally, Michael conceded to himself, though not to Andrew, that his suspicions were probably unfounded. Hunting and trapping in the woods, he'd seen lots of men who looked as rough as the ones in that camp, and he had thought little about it. But he and Andrew were beyond the settled country, beyond the protecting arm of the law. It was in his mind that the men might still follow, hoping to catch the Lewises in camp, asleep, where they'd be easy picking. He decided to make a cold camp tonight, well off the trail, where not even an Indian could find them.
We'll ride on, but we'll keep eyes in the backs of our heads.
They rode a couple of hours. Michael couldn't get over the feeling of being followed. Once he thought he heard a sound.
Hold up.
Michael listened. He heard nothing more, but pointed to heavy undergrowth just off the trail.
Let's go yonder and wait a spell.
Again?
Again.
Andrew's face twisted with doubt, but he followed Michael's lead as he always had.
I thought you had nerves like Papa. I never seen you so jittered up before.
There's a difference between being jittered and being careful. Papa was generally careful.
They waited a little while. At the sound, Michael glanced at his brother with a silent, told-you-so. He cradled the rifle in his arm so he could bring it quickly into use. Andrew, believing now, followed his example. Michael expected the bearded horse traders, but to his surprise, he saw only 2 men. They were not from the camp on the creek. At least, he'd not seen them there. One, a huge man, was clean-shaven except for a day or two of stubble growth. The other had a mustache and short beard, more neatly trimmed than would be expected on the trail. He wore a black coat with swallowtails that split on either side of the saddle. He looked just about like every itinerant minister who had ever sought out the Lewis family over the years to take a meal or two and a night's rest beneath a roof in return for delivering the Lord's blessings. They looked in no way like that group of potential brigands camped on the creek. He was considering whether to hail them or just let them pass on unaware. The men reined up in surprise and looked toward the source of the sound. The larger man brought up a pistol. The black-clad rider looked around suspiciously.
Who's there? We're peaceful men in the Lord's service.
Michael and Andrew glanced at one another. Michael remained suspicious, but didn't want to be.
The worst they'll want to do is maybe take up a collection. We ain't got enough money on us to make a clatter in a tin cup.
Without waiting for Michael's approval, he mounted his horse and rode out. Michael had no choice but to follow. Well, Andrew was starved for company. Maybe there was no harm in this pair. Michael raised his right hand to show that he meant no mischief, for he couldn't very well use the long rifle one-handed.
Hope we didn't scare you none. We didn't know who you might be.
The one who looked like a preacher gave him a quick study.
Bless the Lord, I thought for a minute we might have fallen into the hands of Philistines. But these look like a pair of good young Christian men.
The man's companion only nodded, his half-closed eyes unreadable. He probably approached 300 pounds, his arms bigger than most men's thighs. The black-clad rider extended his hand.
I'm the Reverend Fairweather. This gentle giant is my friend and traveling companion, Abijah Wilkes. He was once given to the evils of drunkenness and sloth, using his great strength in brawling and bloodying his fellow man. But now, he is a student of the scriptures, as I hope you two young gentlemen are.
Andrew accepted the handshake.
I'm Andrew Lewis. This tall, silent feller is my brother Michael. We've had a little churching now and again when a preacher come around. Not near enough, though, I'm bound to say.
Yeah, so long as the heart is in the right place and the feet set upon a path of righteousness, I am sure the Lord is pleased.
Fairweather gave Michael and Andrew a long appraisal, less critical than the one they'd received at the creek.
I hope you will forgive our nervousness. We came across a rather disreputable group of men back along the trail. Well, to be honest, we feared for our lives. I feel that had God not been watching over us, we might now be in his company and our meager possessions in the hands of blackguards.
We seen the same bunch. The victuals they were fixing sure did smell good. But Michael thought they looked worrisome.
Out here it pays to be cautious.
Michael thought Fairweather looked all right, but he would not have wanted to meet the big man Wilkes alone on some dark and lonely trail.
I suppose they saw nothing worth the taking in such a poor pair as I and Brother Wilkes. They're waiting for larger game. But I would not be surprised if they decided to follow us and catch us in camp.
Same thought came to me. That's why we went to the timber. We thought you might be them.
A prudent response. I say, young gentlemen, would you mind if we ride along with you for a time? They might be less disposed to bother four of us.
Well,
Michael had reservations about having to listen to Brother Fairweather's preaching. He had sneaked out of many a prayer meeting and had taken to the woods to escape the pungent smell of hellfire and brimstone as some minister beat with all his might upon the doors of the devil's lair.
We'd be tickled to have you.
Fairweather glanced behind him.
Then I suggest we make some distance while the Lord's good sunshine still blesses us. One never knows what mischief Satan may plant in evil mind.
They rode along at a steady pace that was not a challenge to the horses. Fairweather talked a great deal. Michael supposed he was glad to have a new audience, for Abijah Wilkes seemed not to be listening. He had probably heard all these stories too many times. Michael thought it might even be possible that Wilkes had been cheated in the matter of brains, even as he had been overly blessed in the matter of size and muscle. He had seen people like that, unusually strong in body but weak in mind. Luke Blackwood, for one. Fairweather talked of the government in Washington, of turmoil in Mexico, of Thomas Jefferson and the Louisiana Purchase, by which the United States had acquired a huge block of land west of the Mississippi from the French Emperor Napoleon.
It is now God's plan for Americans to go forth into
the great
land.
Michael caught a questioning expression from his younger brother. He remembered what Andrew had said about people who knew just what God wanted.
God's blessing to guide us.
Have you spoken to God about this?
Many times.
And has he answered you back?
Fairweather gave Andrew a sharp glance.
Not in words such as yours and mine. He speaks in whispers that do not depend upon the ear, but go directly to the mind and the heart.
Mr. Fairweather, have you traveled around much of this country?
I've traveled the highways, and I have traveled the dark and narrow traces. I have found God and Satan in eternal conflict wherever I go. Sometimes it seems a most one-sided fight, weighted in Satan's favor. But we of the faith must lend our sinews to aid the Lord to final victory. Is that not so, young gentlemen?
What do you do when Satan wins anyway?
Why, one does not give up. One continues to fight no matter the odds to keep his faith, like Jonah in the lion's den.
Andrew blinked in surprise and gave Michael a knowing look.
I thought that was Daniel.
Fairweather seemed not even to notice, for he was swept along on the strong tide of his subject.
The final victory will be that of the righteous. Have no fear. It is written in the book of truth.
Fairweather reached into his saddlebag and drew out a heavy volume bound in black leather.
Every mystery of life is explained herein. With this as our fortress, we need have no fear.
Andrew said no more. He stared a while at Fairweather, then at Wilkes, who sat slumped like a sack of grain on his big, plodding brown horse. Though Michael was hardly a student of the Bible, he knew Andrew was right about it being Daniel in the lion's den. He had heard his mother use that story as an illustration of never giving up hope. Jonah was in some other story, a fisherman, maybe. At least, it seemed like he had something to do with fish. Wilkes said nothing. He stared ahead with hooded eyes. Andrew gradually dropped back, bringing up the rear behind Michael and the other two. He held his rifle across his lap as if he were watching for a deer to make their supper. But Michael discerned that he was actually watching Fairweather and Wilkes. It was the first time Michael had seen Andrew looking genuinely worried since they'd started their trip. Fairweather looked behind him often. He said he was uneasy about the men back at the creek. They could be following, hoping to set upon this little group by surprise at the night's camp.
I suggest we stop before dark, make a quick supper, and then move on farther down the trail. Then we can make a cold camp well off the trail.
Sounds like a good plan.
That had been Michael's own plan. They managed to shoot a couple of squirrels. These were to be their supper, along with some hardtack that Fairweather said he carried with him. While Michael and Andrew prepared the squirrels for cooking, Fairweather and Wilkes went out to open their pack. Wilkes chopped wood with a short-handled axe.
I made a bad mistake, Michael, inviting them to go along with us. That man is a liar. He's no more preacher than me and you.
Michael already had the same feeling.
How do you know?
No preacher would have gotten Daniel and Jonah mixed up. He'd just as well forgotten about Adam and Eve.
Michael frowned, watching the two men out by the horses.
Don't blame yourself too much. He sounds like a preacher, and he's got a preacher face. But he's got liar's eyes.
I thought I'd seen that a lot sooner than I did.
You're learning, little brother. But we're stuck with them both. Best we can do now is keep our eyes open to a well shed of them.
Fairweather said grace, and they had their supper. Afterward, they rode on until full dark, departing from the trail a while before they stopped at camp. Fairweather was still talking as they rolled out their blankets. Andrew spread his own closer than usual to Michael's. Michael noticed that Andrew never let his gaze stray from Fairweather and Wilkes. Andrew was learning.
We'll think up some excuse and let them go their own way tomorrow. We'll tell them we want to bide a while and do some hunting.
I got a bad feeling it's them doing the hunting.
Then we better neither one of us go to sleep.
At another time and place, Fairweather's snoring might have lulled Michael off to sleep as well, but he was wide awake. He turned in his blanket to look at his brother. Andrew's eyes were open. Even if they were wrong, Maybe Fairweather was simply not a very good preacher. Michael was glad they'd part from him and Wilkes tomorrow. Michael had already had more than enough of the man's constant talk. Come to a fight with any brigands they might meet on the trail, a preacher like Fairweather probably wouldn't be much help. As for Wilkes, Michael hadn't heard the man say 20 words. His eyes seemed half closed most of the time, hiding whatever might be running through the mind that worked behind them. If there was a mind, Wilkes's bovine manner left room for doubt. Michael always slept with his rifle beneath his blanket to protect it from the night dew. He lay with one hand on it, and the feeling gave him comfort. He thought about the home he'd left behind, about Mordecai and his mother, about Uncle Benjamin, about the brothers and sisters and cousins he might never see again. He thought about Natchitoches still ahead, remembering the bustling boat town it had been the last time he saw it. Unbidden, the dark-haired, dark-eyed Marie Villeray invaded his thoughts. Grown up and married by now, likely, with two babies in the crib and another on the way. Andrew gave him a sharp nudge. Two vague shapes moved silently toward them in the night's darkness. The larger of the pair came to the edge of Andrew's blankets. Michael knew it was Wilkes. He saw the man raise both hands, and he saw the blade of the short-handled axe outlined against the night sky.
Andrew, move!
Hut!
Michael jammed the stock of the rifle against his shoulder. There was no time to aim, nor light to see the front sight. Wilkes dropped the axe, folded his arms across his broad belly, and sank to his knees. Fairweather had a rifle. He raised it in haste. The flash blinded Michael for a moment. He was not hit, but he surmised that Andrew was not either, for Andrew brought his own rifle to his shoulder.
Damn! May the Lord smite thee!
The footsteps hurried toward the place where they'd staked their horses. Andrew knelt beside the fallen Wilkes.
Why? What have we got that's worth killing for?
Two horses, a mule, two rifles. People like this ain't greedy. They'll kill for a little of nothing.
Wilkes was a while in dying, for he had taken Michael's bullet in his stomach. Michael found himself shaking like Andrew in the aftermath of violence. It had been too much like Texas.
Ain't there anything we can do to help him?
He was fixing to split you wide open with that axe. Now you want to help him?
It just don't seem right to stand here and just watch him die like some animal.
He is an animal. If you've got to pity somebody, think about the people he's already killed the way he was fixing to kill you.
When Wilkes at last went still, Michael and Andrew retreated to the horses. Fairweather's was gone. The man's saddle lay on the ground. In his haste to get away, he'd ridden off bareback.
All he's got is his rifle and maybe his powder horn. He'll be coming back to get what he can.
I'd as soon not be here.
We'll make it hard for him to find us. We'll go further into the woods.
They saddled the horses, including Wilkes's, to leave as little as possible for Fairweather to find and use against them. They left his saddle, for it would have been a burden to them anyway. Andrew picked up Wilkes's axe and tied it on Jethro's pack. They rode perhaps a half mile in the darkness. They slipped the saddles to the ground, staked the horses, and sat down to wait for the rest of the night. One facing one direction, one the other, so Fairweather would have less chance of slipping up on them. Neither had any wish to sleep. Michael's stomach was in a turmoil. The sudden flash of guns and the stench of black powder had set loose nightmarish memories.
You feeling all right, Michael?
Middling. How about you?
Kind of poorly in my stomach. Feels like everything wants to come up.
Michael remembered his own reaction to the deaths of Quint and Patcheye. He could empathize with his brother.
You've never been shot at before.
Does it get easier after the first time?
I don't expect it ever gets easier.
After the seemingly interminable darkness, Michael welcomed the first signs of daylight. His stomach was still unsettled, the original upset now worsened by loss of sleep. Andrew pushed shakily to his feet. He had not slept either.
We leaving?
I sure got no taste for any breakfast. I want to put this place as far behind us as we can.
We can't just go off and leave Wilkes laying back yonder.
He'd have left us without looking back. Besides, Fairweather might be there waiting for us. Let him do the burying. And the preaching, too, if there's to be any.
Andrew shrugged, still troubled, but bowing to Michael's judgment.
You reckon I hit him?
If you did, it didn't slow him down much.
I kind of hope I didn't. I'd hate to have a man's blood on my hands. Don't it bother you knowing you killed Wilkes?
Michael examined his conscience and found no guilt.
No more than if I'd shot a sheep-killing dog.
Andrew went to their pack where they had dropped it on the ground in the darkness.
We gathered up in sort of a hurry last night. Looks like we got Fairweather saddlebags along with everything else.
Andrew lifted them for Michael to see, then opened the pouch on one side. He took out the black-bound Bible Fairweather had shown them. He opened it and silently read an inscription on the first inside page.
How old would you guess Fairweather to be?
40, maybe. Man that old, it's hard to tell.
Andrew ran his finger along the lines.
Given to the Reverend Lemuel Fairweather by his loving mother and father on his 24th birthday, June 25th, in this year of our Lord, 1818. May its words light the path of righteousness for him that he may faithfully serve the Lord.
Andrew looked up questioningly.
That's way too young to have been the Fairweather we met.
I'd reckon there was a Reverend Fairweather. The man we met robbed him, killed him too, more than likely. He took the name and played the preacher so he could put people off their guard, like he tried to do with us.
Michael shuddered. It had worked for a while.
It's a good thing he put Joan in the lion's den instead of in the belly of the whale. Else we might not have figured out there was something wrong about him.
You figured it out. I didn't know where Jonah belonged.
Andrew managed a thin smile as he patted the cover of the Bible.
That's because every time there was preaching done and reading from the book, you slipped out and went hunting.
They saddled and packed their horses and the mule. Andrew gave Wilkes' horse a critical study.
Reckon we ought to take him along? We might come up needing an extra one.
Michael had no compunctions against taking a dead man's horse, especially a man who had intended to kill them. But he saw a troublesome possibility.
Wilkes stole him, more than likely. Maybe even killed for him. If somebody was to recognize that horse, it'd put us in a ticklish place.
They took what they thought they could use from Wilkes' belongings, which wasn't much, and left the rest lying on the ground. The horse followed them a while, despite their best efforts to turn him back.
Damn fool animal could get us hung.
But after a time, they reached a big green meadow and the horse stopped to graze. Michael and Andrew left him there, contented. Horses had a homing instinct. This one might eventually drift back to where he'd originally come from, if it was not too far. If he didn't, this was as good a country as any for a horse to get along by himself. They rode in a moody silence.
Now, ain't you glad you followed after me?
I'm sorry about what happened back there, but I'm not sorry I came. There's a lot I can learn from you, Michael.
A little warmth came to Michael, helping offset the sourness in his stomach.
Maybe we can learn a lot from each other.
Andrew gradually began to regain his happy demeanor. He began to take notice of the country through which they traveled. He would point out what he considered a likely place to put up a cabin, to drop a plow point into the sod.
There's plenty of good land here, Michael. Soil looks rich. We could do a lot worse than help ourselves with some of it before the big rush starts.
Michael was more concerned about Fairweather than about locating good farmland.
We ain't even hardly got our trip started yet.
If he had been so inclined, Michael might have admitted that Andrew was right. But some deep urge drew him westward, toward a distant land he had seen once before. Others would stop here and make this into a home eventually. They would plow up these meadows and cut down the forests and transform the land as nearly as possible into their own personal images of the places they had come from. That, he knew, was what Andrew would do. But Michael liked it the way he saw it. It would change, probably soon, and he didn't think he'd care to see it then.
You better not go back to the Mark Trail for a while. That Fairweather may hold a grudge.
You sure you won't get us lost?
We know the general direction of the trail. As long as we travel the same way, we can always find it again by taking a straight line to the north.
By the second day, Michael was beginning to wonder which might be worse, running headlong into Fairweather or continuing to fight the canebrakes and the deadfall timber that taxed their animals almost to the limits of endurance. The pack mule stumbled and fell, trying to pick its way across two fallen trees. The impact broke the short handle of Wilkes' axe tied on the pack.
At this rate, we ought to reach Natchitoches before winter. Winter of next year.
At least we'll reach it without one of us getting Fairweather's bullet in our back. You've already seen that this is a dangerous country. I don't understand how you can be making jokes.
Beats crying.
By the third day, both horses had their legs skinned, and the mule was putting up so much resistance, Michael literally had to drag him across some rough places while Andrew rode behind him, applying the end of a rope smartly across the rump.
Come on, come on!
If we cripple our horses, we'll never get there.
If you want to turn back...
But Michael knew Andrew was right. It was better to face the possibility of another fight with Fairweather, or whatever his name was, than to continue this hard struggle, perhaps losing their horses. Without saying anything more, he turned northward. Andrew accepted this little victory in discreet silence, while Michael spoke to the recalcitrant mule Jethro in somewhat less than endearing terms. It took longer than Michael expected to intersect the trail. The animals were worn out, the brothers were exhausted, and Michael deemed it wise to make camp. Andrew stared at the ground.
Wagons. Somebody's brought wagons along here.
The tracks showed wide iron rims cutting deeply into the soft ground. The wagons were heavily loaded, possibly carrying freight.
I'll bet those folks have had hell. This trail's too rough for wagons.
Andrew got down and examined the tracks closely.
Yeah, maybe so. There's two wagons I'd make it. Fresh tracks.
Andrew nudged horse droppings with the toe of his boot.
Probably made this afternoon sometime. If we was to keep riding, we'd probably catch up with them pretty soon.
Why would we want to do that?
Company. Besides, the more of us there are, less chance there'd be of fair weather trying anything.
Michael had an old aversion to dependence upon others, and it welled up stubbornly.
We've done all right by ourselves. Remember what happened when we joined up with Fairweather.
Andrew had had his say. He bowed to Michael's judgment without arguing, though his face betrayed disappointment.
They're bound to be traveling slower than we are. We'll overtake them tomorrow.
We'll say howdy-do and go on our way. We don't want to be held back by any slow-moving wagons.
Gray clouds began rolling in just before dark. Smelling rain, Michael and Andrew spread a pack cover between two trees as a makeshift substitute for a tent. They ate a meager supper before the storm began, then huddled beneath the small shelter while rain pelted the canvas. It dripped through in places, and after a while, runoff water began coursing around the brothers. They slept in spite of their dampened bedding, for both were bone-weary. Michael didn't worry about standing guard. If Fairweather was half as smart as Michael thought he was, he would not be moving in all this rain. The rain stopped at dawn, and the sun burst bright and warm through breaking clouds. Andrew started a breakfast of roasted squirrel over a small fire made from dry wood they had sheltered beneath their blankets through the night. Michael saw after the animals, which had enjoyed no shelter at all. He could arouse no compassion for the mule, but he felt sorry for the horses.
We'll stay in camp a while this morning. It'll give the stock a chance to graze in our bed and time to dry out.
We won't catch up to the wagons.
Muddy as it is, them wagons won't be traveling far. Told you anyway, we'll just say howdy and go on.
I heard you. I was just thinking that maybe with wagons they've got something better to eat than squirrel.
A man can live all right on squirrel. I've seen the time I've done on a sight less.
They didn't talk much all morning. Michael staked the animals out to graze while Andrew spread their blankets in the sunshine. Andrew stayed in camp. Michael walked out into the woods to see if he might scare up some game. He was about to call the venture a loss when he came upon several deer grazing at the edge of a tiny clearing. Michael brought down a doe. He gutted her and packed the carcass into camp on his shoulder. He dropped it on the ground beside his brother.
There. You can give the squirrels a little rest.
Yeah, if we just had some bread to go with it.
Andrew seldom argued in any belligerent way. He just kept gnawing until a person gave up.
Your wagon people probably ain't even got squirrel. But if it'll comfort you to find out, we'll likely overtake it before dark.
It was past mid-afternoon when they came upon a place where the wagons had been camped overnight. Gray ashes were cold in a shallow pit. The ruts cut by the wagons went much deeper into the muddy ground than they had the day before. Andrew got down and went over the sign with a great deal of interest.
Two wagons, just like I guessed. Can't tell for sure about the people. Three or four, I'd expect, from the looks of the tracks.
Michael let Andrew do the inspection. That was what he was best at.
Families, you reckon?
Footprints all look grown-sized.
Andrew made a second inspection of the cold fire pit and kicked something he found lying on the ground. He looked disappointed.
What is it?
Squirrel skins.
It was the first time all day that Michael had found anything to smile about. Deep tracks showed that the wagons and their teams were laboring heavily. Boot tracks driven inches into the mud told of people putting their shoulders to the rear wheels to help push the vehicles out of places where water had stood and the earth seemed to have no bottom.
They'll get tired of this by and by and make camp until things dry up.
It was late in the afternoon when the boys heard the sounds. The pattern was that of men urging a team to pull.
Sounds like work. You sure you want to ride up and get acquainted?
Sounds like the folks might welcome a little help.
And feed you squirrel for supper. Come on, let's see.
It was as he expected. He saw two canvas-covered wagons ahead. The team had been unhooked from the second and hitched onto the first wagon to augment its own. The lead wagon was mired in the edge of a creek, its front wheels out of sight in the running water, its rear wheels sunk to the hubs in the muddy bank. He saw four people. A horsebacker was beside the lead team.
Come on now! Hup.
Hup. Two men were at the rear wheels, tugging, trying to get them to turn. A heavy woman pushed against the end gate. These three were black. Slaves, Michael figured, to the man on the horse.
Remember, it was your idea.
He stepped down and tied his horse. Andrew followed suit. The black man on the right rear wheel smiled broadly when he saw help coming. Michael judged him to be approaching middle age, or already there. The woman appeared to be of roughly the same years. The other black was a boy in his middle teens. The rider turned just long enough to acknowledge the help, then set about urging the teams to a stronger effort.
Come on! Yeah! Come on!
Michael gripped a wagon spoke and gave it all the push he could muster. The wheel turned just a little, then rolled back. Michael straightened to catch his breath. The rider had left the team and was returning.
I'm sorry, mister, but it looks like we'll have to take off part of the load before it'll come out of this hole.
The hell you say?
Michael glanced at Andrew in surprise. His brother broke into a grin. The horsebacker was a woman. Not only was she a woman, wearing a man's trousers considerably too large for her, she was a young woman. Her face was half covered by mud, spattered freely in her attempts to move the wagon. Even so, he could see enough to guess she was still in her 20s. And he could see that she did not appreciate his incredulous staring. There was work to be done. But a woman out here, so far from settled country, accompanied only by three slaves, it didn't seem a likely thing at all.
Where's the rest of your bunch, ma'am?
He sensed that he had touched a raw nerve.
Count us. You see all there is right here in front of you.
Michael looked at the lead wagon, then back at the other, its tongue lowered to the ground. Its team had been unhooked and taken to help pull the first one across the creek.
You can't be all here by yourself. A woman?
Why not? I've made out for myself most of my born life. Anyway, I got Marcus here and Nellie, and Isham can do a man's work when it's needful. We've come a long ways. We can go the rest of it.
It just don't seem a proper thing.
For a woman to do a man's work? I had a man. I did my work and most of his, too. I'm getting along real well without him, thank you. I can get along without you, too, if you're of a mind to give advice that ain't been asked for.
Michael was caught without an answer.
Ma'am, we wouldn't think of leaving you in this fix. You just tell us what you want done, and don't pay any attention to my big brother. He got kicked in the head by a mule when he was a baby. Still mad about it.
Andrew's humor seemed to take the edge from the woman's resentment.
We'll have to move some of the load off of the wagon.
Michael had suggested the same thing, but to remind her might only stir her to another speech. He climbed onto the end gate and untied the wagon sheet. He was surprised to see many wooden barrels neatly stacked and lashed down with rope.
What's this, gunpowder?
More potent than that. It's whiskey. As good as Kentucky ever sent out to a thirsty world. You see something the matter with it?
I just expected household goods and such as that. I never figured to see a woman hauling sipping whiskey.
People that drink it, they don't care who brought it. Now are you helping or watching?
Michael and Andrew worked together to worry a barrel to the ground. The black man Marcus outweighed either of them by 100 pounds and had muscles like a bull. Shortly, the men and the boy Isham, big for his age, had the wagon half empty.
Maybe that's enough. Every barrel we unload, somebody's got to tote across the creek afoot.
She rode back to the lead team.
Come on!
The four men tugged at the rear wheels. The black woman, almost as hefty as Marcus, pushed with her shoulder against the end gate. The wheels rocked tentatively forward and back, then the horses took hold and pulled the wagons across. The men kept pushing to maintain the momentum. Michael came out on the other side, soaked to the waist and spattered with mud. Big Marcus and young Isham unhitched both teams, leading them back across for the second wagon.
We might have to unload that one as well.
The woman had her own notion.
We'll try with the whole load first. We've taken the other one in too slow and got it stuck. This time, we'll go in a running like hell and see if we can make it across before the mud has a chance to grab a hold.
The woman climbed to the wagon seat. The double team hit the water in a long trot. The wagon lurched once, seeming about to stop, then broke free and came up on the far bank, trailing water from the wheels and the bottom of the wagon bed.
Whoa! Whoa!
The woman climbed down and took a long look at the second wagon. Standing, its wheels sank several inches into the rain-softened ground.
We'd just as leave stop here a day or two till the ground dries some. Else we'll be doing this at every frog pond we come to.
It'll put more age on the whiskey.
If she found any humor in the remark, she didn't show it. She had business on her mind.
Marcus, we got to go back and fetch them other barrels.
Yes'm.
Marcus jerked his head at the boy Isham. They bore a considerable resemblance. Michael assumed the lad was Marcus's son. The woman turned to Michael and Andrew.
I do appreciate y'all's pitching in to get the wagons over. If you was of a mind to stay, Natalie's a good cook. We'll have something to eat after a while.
Michael was torn between curiosity over this woman and doubt as to whether he wanted to risk having to put up with any more of her sharp tongue.
Supper sounds real good to us. While we wait, we got nothing better to do than help with them barrels.
The matter taken out of his hands, Michael went along with it. Out of the woman's hearing, however, he took the opportunity to reprimand his brother.
Thought I was making the decisions.
You are. Just wanted to be sure you made the right one. I sure would admire to eat a woman-cooked meal.
Have to be just squirrel.
I was fixing to offer them the dough we just shot.
That'll put us back to squirrel tomorrow when we go on.
At least we'll eat good tonight. Hard work gives me a fearsome appetite.
Andrew's gaze went to the woman. She was unharnessing the teams while Nellie started a fire with dry wood she evidently had kept protected in one of the wagons. Michael suspected his brother's interest was in more than a good meal. At nearly 20, Andrew was noticing things, like women.
She's some older than you.
No harm in just looking. She don't hurt my eyes a bit.
That's probably what Samson said before his haircut.
She look anything like that girl, Marie?
I don't know what you're talking about.
They stored the barrels back in the wagon they had come from. Wet to the skin anyway, Michael walked out into the stream and soaked much of the mud from his clothes. The woman ventured into the water. She washed the mud from her face and out of her light brown hair, which reached almost to her waist when she let it down. Michael couldn't help but stare. He had always admired long hair on a woman.
Nellie will rinse out them clothes for you if you want her to.
They'd be dirty again by tomorrow. Traveling ain't much for clean.
The woman smiled for the first time. It was a pleasant change.
That bothered me when we first started out, but I got over it.
Looking at her now, he found her handsomer than he had first supposed, and younger. But her blue eyes hinted at long, hard experience and more than a little cynicism. He surmised that life had not offered her much in the way of comforts. For whatever it had given, it had exacted a price.
I don't believe I heard your name.
I never had time to give it. I'm Michael Lewis. That yonder is my brother Andrew.
She stuck her hand out like a man.
I'm Sally Boone, out of Kentuck. No kin to Daniel that I know of.
Daniel who?
Never mind. I don't reckon he's much heard of except where I come from. Where are you and your brother headed?
Natchitoches to start. After that, ain't much telling. Maybe Texas, eventually, if things go right.
Folks talk like Texas is a right smart of a place, but it don't welcome foreigners.
That's the truth. But maybe it won't always be like that.